doing out there today? A nice little snowy Friday for you. So hopefully you're careful if you're out and about. Getting this thing ready to rock and roll. Busy Friday for us. A lot of great guests on the show. We'll talk CU Utah with Brian Howell. All my talk about the Pac-12 and all that stuff. None of it matters if the Buffs don't win tomorrow. That game was moved from Friday to Saturday, by the way. We'll have Cody Rourke on the program a little bit later on. We'll get to our Power to Play Sports poll question. My favorite games outside of Broncos-Panthers in the NFL this week. And, of course, last but most certainly not least, joining us now, Zach Stevens from DNVR Broncos. Oh, wow. Wow. Susan and Cheryl, they love them some Zach Stevens. That much is certain. Zach, my friend, how are you?
Man, I had to come on to get some warmth from Susan and Cheryl with this weather outside, and man, get hyped for this 4-8 Broncos, 4-8 Panthers game.
Yeah, we have a bigger crowd in our studio anymore than any of the stadiums because with that live studio audience, right? Okay, talk to us first. Christian McCaffrey, is he a no-go for this game?
Yeah, he's not going to play, which is a huge bummer, but it obviously helps the Broncos' chances of winning in this game. But, man, I think just as a Colorado sports fan, you wanted to see Christian out there, especially he's only played in three games this year, and in all three of those games he's balled out, and the Panthers have lost. He averaged 125 yards from scrimmage in all three of those games and two touchdowns per game, yet the Panthers were 0-3. I think that's kind of like a perfect game for the Broncos this weekend was and Colorado sports fans was to see Christian ball out but have the Broncos win, right?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think you're spot on when you talk about the mixed feelings, because on one end you're like, I mean, that's going to give the Broncos a much better shot to win. Fully healthy Christian McCaffrey, or even slightly hurt, that guy's just ridiculous. But at the same time, you want to see him. At the beginning of the week, there was the whole, you know, the Christian McCaffrey, the Ed McCaffrey tie-ins. We're talking about that. I can't believe sometimes when I think about teams not playing Denver, this would have been Christian's first time playing against the Broncos. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah, which is absolutely wild. And, yeah, it's such a bummer because, like you said, earlier this week we were talking to him. He said he felt really, really good. Then he tweaks his quad and isn't able to be out there. And the crazy thing about him is he hadn't missed a game. I think he missed one game at Stanford, and that was the only game he had missed in his entire football career coming into this year. And, of course, he's only played in three games this year with injuries.
Yeah, no, it's bittersweet. It's kind of a tough pill to swallow locally. Wanted to see him out there. But for the Broncos, I mean, it does give them a shot. Zach, can you talk to us about injuries, inactive guys, updates on A.J. Boye, Will Parks, those kind of players?
Yeah, well, Broncos, good news for the Broncos on the injury front. It looks like the only player that's not going to be able to play is Graham Glasgow. He's not trending in the right direction. Highly unlikely he plays this week. But Austin Schlottman has actually came in and done a really good job for him when he's been called on. The offensive line has actually played really well over the past few weeks, so that shouldn't be a big concern. A.J. Boye will be done for the rest of the season with his suspension, and actually the worst part about it is it goes into next year as well, the first two games of the season, so that's killer. I think it's tough that they're not going to have him this weekend for the remainder of the season, but if they were counting on him for next year, not have him for the first two games, so that's a big bummer moving forward. But there's also a chance that A.J. Boye is not back on the Broncos next year. He has $13 million cap hit and zero dead money. So that is something that the Broncos needed to save money, wanted to use that money somewhere else. They could go that way, even with him being suspended. But other than that, Bryce Callahan, you won't have him, so that's a big bummer this week, not having your top two corners to contain Robbie Anderson. But Teddy Bridgewater isn't really a guy that's going to beat you by himself. Now, he can definitely beat you. He's very, very efficient, but they don't ask him to do a lot.
Yeah, I think I look at the positions, and there's been so many injuries. There's been so many weird things going on with the Broncos. Doesn't it feel like that cornerback position, collectively one position, we've just dealt with it with Bryce Callahan taking a while, A.J. Boye off and on, and then here we are again with both those guys. And, man, that corner position has been a rough one for Denver this season.
Yeah, it does. And, I mean, a guy who you like, Devontae Bosby, has had his own ups and downs with being cut, going to Arizona, coming back. So I think you will get to see Devontae Bosby this week. And you did mention Will Parks. Will Parks will also be playing. He's wearing number 27, which is, of course, a very special jersey in Broncos history with Darren Williams. And he'll be wearing 27. He's going to be playing every special teams unit, which is pretty incredible since his first practice was Wednesday. But he just fit right back into that unit. And I do expect him to play on defense a good amount. I think you could really see him in the nickel with having Ojemudia outside. You're also missing the Sang Bassey for the rest of the year with his injury. So I would expect to see a good dose of Will Parks. And, man, I wouldn't even be surprised if Will Parks makes a big play, whether that's a big hit. Wouldn't even be shocked if he gets an interception like in this game.
Boy, wouldn't that be something on a year like this for Denver with everything going on? Get a guy that I think was a fan favorite, and you get him back here, and he's able to make a play and help you possibly get that fifth win of the season.
Yeah, and like you said, the Broncos fans need something to cheer for. Will's certainly a guy, and a big play from him could be very big. And another guy that I think will be big in the secondary this week, and probably a big part of the outcome of whether the Broncos win or lose, is Michael Ojemudia, a guy who showed a lot of promise, has also had some rookie struggles, and it has been kind of put on the bench the last couple of weeks leading up to last week, and he bounced back pretty strong last week. And he's going to have a huge task because pretty much he's the Broncos' number one cornerback for the rest of the season. So the Broncos will get to see if he sinks or floats the rest of these games.
Isn't that crazy? I was skeptical about the pick, and not necessarily the pick of Ojemudia. I was more of a guy that wanted to see Denver go for a corner a little bit higher in that second round, even maybe a first round. But, you know, he proved me wrong. I mean, Denver proved me wrong. You know, they found a guy in the third. I liked him. But as you said, he's had some ups and downs. That all being said, Zach, and this is nothing against him because I think either way he's going to be eventually, we all hope anyway, he'll be one of their starting consistent corners. Do you think Denver goes in a second round? I mean, I know we're way out before that, but is that something to consider right now with all the injuries, A.J. Boye's uncertain future, Callahan's injury history? Does Denver need to go high for a cornerback this draft?
It absolutely could be. And right now, if you were to ask me where the Broncos are looking at in the first round, I'd say cornerback and quarterback. Now, if Drew Locke proves to be the guy, then you can scratch quarterback off that list. And obviously, we hope in the next four games, you either know whether to scratch it off or whether to circle it in Sharpie and make sure that's what you go off or go after in the first round. But outside of that, you're not going anywhere on offense in the first round of the draft, which is crazy just because of the pieces they have. And on defense, you could maybe go defensive line, but you could also sign Shelby Harris up, bring Jarrell Casey back. And at cornerback, it's kind of the same thing. You could bring these guys back, Bryce Callahan, A.J. Boye, or you could let them go and use money elsewhere, and then that is a huge need in the first round. So, yeah, absolutely, I could see the Broncos going corner in the first round. And when you were talking about not necessarily the player you didn't like with Ojemudia in the third, well, it makes sense that you're a little skeptical of a third-round cornerback. In the past couple of drafts, the Broncos have gone third-round cornerback, and they ended up with Isaac Yiadom, a guy that they traded for a seventh-round pick this year, and they ended up with another guy who ended up playing receiver for the Broncos before being cut. So not the best track record there.
No, and that's why I think people probably get tired of me harping on it, but every year I'm like, man, they got to go deep here. They got to go first round, second round at least for a corner. Maybe we'll finally see that. And I know a lot of the guys that were early last year that were high up weren't necessarily the best tacklers, at least according to their college profile. So Vic may be moving on there, but I'd sure like to see it. What about Shelby Harris? You mentioned that. In his contract is going to be up, correct? And if so, doesn't he become a priority? Because I really think he's a game changer out there.
Yeah, he really has been a game changer. I mean, his impact was so big against the Chiefs. He may have been the team's MVP in that game, and that was his first game back after missing a month due to COVID.
Wow.
Only played in half the snaps. He's going to play in more snaps this week. And a key thing here is Vic Fangio absolutely loves him, and we've seen Vic Fangio's love for him grow tremendously over the past year. So I think Vic is going to be pounding the table for him, and I think John will want to keep him around as well. And so that's where a decision comes down. Are you really going to pay Jarrell Casey $11 million and also pay Shelby Harris, you know, maybe $7 to $10 million per year? Or are you making the decision moving on from Jarrell Casey, saying, shoot, we only gave up a seventh-round pick for him last season. He got hurt, which was unfortunate. But now let's use that money that we would pay Jarrell Casey, because he has zero dead cap, and let's give it to Shelby, or a lot of it to Shelby, because he's younger.
Man, this offseason is going to be absolutely nuts, isn't it? So many question marks surrounding it, because they got Garrett Bowles taken care of, but guy you just mentioned there in Shelby, Justin Simmons, which they clearly think extremely highly of, Philip Lindsay, there's a lot of question marks. So, and what are they going to do with Melvin Gordon with that DUI situation? I mean, man, this offseason is going to be nuts, man.
Yeah, and that's not even talking about the quarterback position, which may be a huge question. And, of course, the best thing for the Broncos is that quarterback is not a huge question, and that these next four games, Drew Lock comes out, throws, you know, two touchdowns, no picks, 250 yards, 65% completion every single game. And then you're feeling good about him going into next year. But Brady, I mean, we've had this conversation for this whole year saying, okay, after these five games, we should know. Okay, after these four games, we should know. Well, we still don't. So I really, really hope that we know after four games. But, you know, just living in the world we're living in now, I'm not quite sure we're going to know at the end of the season. So the Broncos are going to have to evaluate those options at quarterback and say, okay, we feel this way about Drew. Is there anyone out there that we feel better about?
Zach Stevens joining us from DNVR Broncos. Okay, Zach, I know you got to watch the games. You know, you got to have the eye test. How does Drew Lock look there? But if you're just looking at stats, and sometimes we can say stats can lie a little bit and they can be a little bit deceptive. But when you look at the worst passer completion ratio in the NFL, Drew Lock is there. And, you know, you see a lot of other quarterbacks that are, okay, Drew Brees is in the 70s, which is insane. You see some of these other guys way up there in the 60s, and they're all fairly close, but there's three quarterbacks that are at the tail end of that thing that aren't even close: Carson Wentz, Sam Darnold, and Drew Lock. I mean, don't you think in these next four games, he has to flat out play, he has to, as you mentioned, ball out in order to overcome being in that terrible category?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you were to take Drew Lock's name off of those stats and show anyone those stats, they would say, yeah, he's not your franchise quarterback. I mean, he has more picks than touchdowns. He has a 55% completion percentage, which is not acceptable in the NFL. And it's not like he's done anything well statistically, really, in these games. So he needs to flip that around. And so what I'm looking for, bare minimum, is he needs to throw 60% completion these final four games, over 200 yards per game, show that at least he's doing something to help the team move the ball down the field. And he has to only have two interceptions in these final four games, because the interceptions have been the biggest problem. The last time he played a full game, Brady, and didn't have an interception was week one. We're entering the final four games of the season now. And so that will never work in today's NFL. So I need to see him have at least two games in this final stretch where he doesn't have a single interception. And I understand he's not going to be perfect. That's why I'm allowing him to have, you know, one interception in two of these final games. But he can't be averaging one to two picks a game like he has been.
Does Drew Lock realize that these next four games let's just call it what it is, could make or break his career? And I don't even mean make. We could just say save for the time being, save or break his career.
Yeah, he does understand how big that is. And you hope for Drew's sake that he doesn't think about that when it's third and eight on his own 40 trying to make a play. You hope he doesn't think that, because it seems like that's what he was thinking about in Kansas City on that first drive where they went down and then he threw an interception. He was trying to play hero ball. He was trying to make his career in one play right there. You hit it on the head, Brady. He can't really make his career with the Broncos in these final four games, because he's dug himself a pretty big hole, but he can't save it. And he can buy himself one more year of being the guy in these next four games. So, Drew, my advice to Drew is something that I personally don't want to see, and that's just be a boring, boring game manager. I want to see Drew go out there and throw three touchdowns, 300 yards, 70% completion. But if I'm Drew and I'm in his corner, I'm saying, Drew, be vanilla, man. You know, throw one touchdown, throw for 210 yards, 64% completion, and no picks. That interception that he had to Troy Fumagalli in the first quarter last week was unacceptable for many reasons, but one, there was a wide-open Nick Vannett just about 5 yards ahead of him. If he just throws the ball to Nick Vannett, no one's saying anything bad about Drew on that play. Broncos pick up the first down. Then, look, they're in the red zone. probably going to go on and at least get a field goal to go up on the Chiefs. And heck, maybe the Broncos end up winning that game. But no, he went for hero ball, and that's all everyone talks about. Rightfully so, too.
Yeah, and Zach, I think that's the trouble, too. I mean, you don't have to be a film expert to see, oh, on the instant replay, there's two guys, one guy going across the field wide open. There's another guy on maybe a 10 and in wide open, 10 and out. Instead, Drew Lock time and time again goes deep with it. It's frustrating. We'll see. I agree with you though. At the end of the day, he's got to be careful because you said he could either save it or break it at this point in time. One more for you on the Jerry Jeudy situation. We've talked a lot about the Twitter stuff. Yesterday, he kind of doubled down on it. I haven't seen if he's deleted it or not, but basically said he's not. He's not going to clear up any rumors about why he shared Odell Beckham Jr. stuff or, even the tweet that got deleted about, at least I got my cardio in. Do the Broncos have a Jerry Jeudy situation going on here?
Yeah, you really hope not. And this is someone who was the guy at the best college football program for the past 3 years. He was the guy. He was getting the ball all the time. Him and Tua had a great connection. And they were lighting it up on a national stage. Now, he comes to the Broncos and has more losses with the Broncos than he had his entire career at Alabama. And I think he hit those losses by, like, week 7
wow.
of this season. So he's just in a totally different place. And a young guy coming off a one-catch game, very, very frustrated. But one thing that I found very interesting this week was both Vic Fangio and John Elway talking about Jerry Jeudy. They didn't say anything negative about him. They didn't say, yeah, we need to see his attitude be more of a team player. They said, we need to get him the ball more. And so these guys, I wouldn't be surprised if Vic and or John are having a conversation with either Pat Shurmur or Drew Lock saying, we have to get the guy the ball. And I think Vic and John are agreeing with Jerry, which I think is very, very fascinating. Instead of going the way of saying, you know, it's a young guy that needs to learn. They're in his corner. And I think, all of Broncos country kind of agrees with Jerry that he needs to have more than one catch on four targets.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Fans definitely agree. Jeudy needs the ball. You certainly understand why he's frustrated. But the tweets are kind of interesting. But I guess we'll see, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if he can go out and have a great game, then nobody's talking about any of those tweets.
Right. And as a wide receiver, when wide receivers get talking, Emmanuel Sanders will call them divas. And that's always something that catches people's attention. You really hope that this isn't something that continues to be an issue and that you can continue to see. Because, yeah, you don't like that. Your team just played really well against the Chiefs. Was it a loss? Yes. But I think everyone felt better about the team coming out of this game. And yet you have Jerry Jeudy kind of bringing everyone down, making them ask questions about this. You don't want that. But if it's just a one-week thing, it's okay. It's a young guy making rookie mistakes. But you don't want a guy that's going to be an issue every single week when he doesn't get his target.
Yeah, no question about it. Zach, what are you working on for us, man, that we can check out at DNVR Broncos?
Oh, man, some game predictions about what's going to happen between the 4-8 Broncos and 4-8 Panthers this week. And you know what, Brady? I think this is the most winnable game that the Broncos have in their remaining four games. And so I do think they'll pull off the win this week. But if they don't, man, it could very easily be an 0-4 stretch for the Broncos. And we could be talking about a top 5 pick for them in the draft next year.
Okay, now I don't know if I'm excited about a top 5 pick or do you finish with the 4, because winning 4 games doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of it. Because look, last year they go 4-1 to end the season and everybody's like, wow, we're going to be ready for the future. I don't know if it really carries over for Denver. So, man, I am conflicted now that you bring that up. Top 5 or 8-8? I mean, what are we rooting for?
Yep. I mean, it is crazy. I've got a piece on thednvr.com up right now that I posted yesterday, breaking down just where the Broncos can finish. And Brady, it's wild. They can be a top 5 pick. They can realistically finish with the number 4 overall pick in the draft, or they could be bumped all the way past 15. Which, man, if they do that and Drew Lock proves to be the guy, then that's okay. But the last thing you want is the Broncos to win games. based off their defense and Drew Lock not looking good. That is not what wow. you want these final four games.
It's wild, isn't it, man? Zach, appreciate you laying it out like that. We got to root for them, but root for them in a certain way. Otherwise, just root for them to lose. I love it. It's the science of football.
Yeah, it really, really is.
Zach, have a great weekend, man. We'll see what happens.
Right on. I have a great weekend, man, and I look forward to breaking it down with you on the other side.
Looking forward to it. As always, that's Zach Stevens, DNVR Broncos. That is a great point. And I know Colfax and I, we work with a guy here. Everybody knows Michael Kirkpatrick thinks you're a bad fan if you root for the Broncos to lose. And listen, there are a lot of those Broncos fans. You never want to lose. You never lose. What does four games matter if the playoffs, I mean, they're not mathematically out yet, but come on. What do four games matter? Four wins. 8-8 going to make you sleep better at night and think the future is bright for Denver? Is that going to do it for you? Because I believe we went 4-1 last year, and what did everybody say? We found our quarterback. Boy, listen, I'm rooting for the best to happen this weekend, but a number four pick? But then again, Elway's probably just going to go get another running back or another left tackle, even though they just signed Garrett Bowles, knowing the way he's drafting lately. 26 minutes after the hour, got a huge game to talk about. My game of the week, actually, the Pac-12 game between CU and Utah. CU has to win that game if they want to have any chance of playing in the Pac-12 championship. It still doesn't look like they will. But maybe the Pac-12 will come to their senses if CU wins. And that could still happen. If the Buffs win, they could change things around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Halls Show, powered by PDC Energy on 1310 KFKA. Brady will be back after the break. Hear Mornings with Gale, weekdays 6 to 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
This is Steve Fairchild at FairchildQBTraining.com, and you are listening to The Halls Show on 1310 KFKA.
We're going to have to be fast here, Colfax. Wouldn't you know it, I blew through my break there. So we're going to catch up with Brian Howell, a big one coming up for CU in Utah. Let me tell you about something awesome going on over at Manweiler Appliance. They're playing Santa this year. They're giving away a Broiler King gas grill valued at nearly $500. $500 for this Broiler King gas grill. Local odds. Stop by Manweiler Appliance on Main Street in Windsor, a local business, too. You're supporting a local business. You're giving yourself a chance to win a $500 grill. And you know what? You're helping us out, too, because our advertisers love to see hooligans in their buildings. It keeps this show going. So you listen to the ads. You hear it. If you like the programs you hear on KFKA, support these businesses. Stop by and say hello to them all. Man, that's fascinating. Colfax, you're all in now. You're all
yeah,
in
after
on,
hearing that.
On losing four games.
Wasn't five or wasn't Von Miller
supposed to come
pick,
back?
Pick at five? Picked at five?
Vaughn was actually two.
He was two, okay.
Chubb was at five.
Okay. My bad. Oh, whatever.
But that's, I
top
mean,
five. Who cares?
Top five. That was Elway's first pick was, his first ever pick was Von Miller.
Right.
And Vaughn obviously worked out. You know, go full circle. You look back at the Carolina game when they won the Super Bowl. Vaughn's the reason for that, right? The main reason. He was the MVP. There's part of me that was with you 100%, but then I'm also like, are they going to do the right thing? Are they going to draft the position of need? And then the other part of me says, okay, if you're at four, let's say you're at four. I think that's the highest Zach said they could get, and I haven't looked at it. You're three spots away from that number one pick. Do you have enough for the Giants to say, hey, you know, because maybe, or Giants, the Jets, because maybe the Jets, maybe there's a small part of them that says maybe a new coaching staff comes in here and can really help Sam Darnold. Maybe we're not ready to give up on him. He was a third pick overall 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. So maybe they're not ready to give up on him. And if they're not, which I think they are, but if they're not, is there a package big enough? Because again, the Jets would just move back three spots. Could you give him a Cortland Sutton? Brady, why? Well, the emergence of Tim Patrick, and then you have Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler. I'm just telling you, Cortland Sutton becomes one of the most tradable assets on your team. And then the emergence of Tim Patrick has popped up. So you have Cortland Sutton, you use your pick, you trade that pick, and something else, you know, maybe a second pick, third pick, something, if you really wanted to go that route. Now, again, I don't know if the Jets would do that. My guess says no. They're going Lawrence all day. He's supposed to be like the next sure thing. But we'll see. I mean, if I'm the Jets, I'm also skeptical because it's like, I was here 3 years ago and we did it at three. We took Sam Darnold at three. Are we ready to say that was a wash and just fill it up again and try it all over? We'll see. 33 minutes after the hour. It's fascinating. Always this time of year, it's very fascinating. But according to Brian Urlacher, who we interviewed, tanking is not a real thing with the players, which I agree with. Players don't care about that. But John Elway, you might want to consider it. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
It's a party in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA, the block party, Wednesdays from 4 to 10 p.m.
Hi, this is Terry Fry, author, journalist, screenwriter, and you're listening to Brady Hull on The Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
This is just a special intro for Brian Howell of Buff Zone. I had to give you this one because it's been on your mind. Brian, I bravehearted you on Twitter today, and now you've got all these lines stuck in your head. I figured you might as well get some tunes stuck in your head, too.
It's still my favorite movie of all time, and I don't know how many times I've seen it. So I loved your reference to it today, and it made me think of many more, and it applies so much to football, so it's great.
It does. And, yeah, you had tweeted something about the last time there was a 100-yard rusher against Utah was quite a while ago. And obviously, we have a running back for the Colorado Buffaloes that it sure feels like he might be the first one to do it since, what, 1957?
Yeah, it's been quite a while, and it's amazing. I mean, the Buffs have only had four times that a running back has topped 70 yards against Utah since they joined the Pac-12. So, I mean, Utah's just stuffed their run every single year. They do it to everybody, but, you know, it's been a long time. 1957, Bob Stransky, 162 yards against the Utes. That was the last time.
Wow. Well, and I was doing some digging today, just looking around at the rushing records. And again, Jarek Broussard's got hopefully a very long career in front of him. But when you have a year like this, COVID or no COVID, 733 yards on only, what, four games, that's phenomenal. And you look at the record books, I mean, he's already right up there in the top five in the single game records. If he has another year or 2 years, you know, even half this production, man, he's going to start already jumping up there. Isn't that nuts that we're talking about Jarek Broussard already as one of the special running backs in Colorado history?
It's crazy. I mean, even two, three games into the season, you know, I had people that are huge Philip Lindsay fans saying, this kid's better than Philip Lindsay, you know, which is almost blasphemous to say around CU, right? Because he was so amazing there. But, you know, Broussard's got to prove it over the long haul. I mean, Lindsay is still the best running back I've seen long term in the last 10 years over here. And but you know, Broussard's off to a great start. More rushing yards through four games than Rashawn Long had during his Heisman season, which is insane.
Yeah, no question about it. It's a rich history of running backs, and it's exciting to see Jarek Broussard and what he's able to do. Well, let's look at this. Let's look at this Pac-12 situation, Brian. I know we've talked about it a little bit, but I mean, first things first. The Buffs have to win against Utah. Otherwise, there's nothing for us to complain about. If that happens, though, if the Buffs win and USC wins, are we hearing anything? Is the Pac-12 going to take another look at this? Because you're seeing the Big Ten. They're making changes. It's 2020. Now's the year to do it. Are you thinking that if both teams win, does the Pac-12 take a step back and say, man, we got to find a way to make the best teams play in this championship?
You know, there's been no rumblings about it, but I think they have to, especially with the situation on the other side where, you know, the North Division basically is Washington now because they can't play this week. And so they are now the de facto North champion. And, you know, they've got COVID issues. You know, what happens if they can't play next week? Do you then put a two-loss Oregon into the title game while an undefeated CU sits home? So, I mean, the Pac-12 would look so bad nationally, and they can't afford to look even worse than they have been. So I've got to think that they've got to do something. If both teams are undefeated and a Washington can't play, you throw all that in there, and they've got to do something.
Yeah, I mean, this is the year to do it. At the beginning of the season, we saw the Mountain West Conference say, hey, we're just going to do best win percentage. Then you see the Big Ten say, hey, we're going to change our minimum game rules to try to make sense of this. And I get why. Everybody's tweeting us, texting us, saying, well, it's because of Ohio State. Okay, great. They're doing something because they know it's better fanfare. And if you're a Pac-12 fan, maybe you're upset that Washington wouldn't be in Oregon, but if you're really a deep Pac-12 fan, you should be looking at the undefeated teams, the teams that look the best, and that should be your championship. That raises all boats, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, let's take out the fact that, you know, we're in Colorado and, you know, we cover the Buffs, right? Take that out of it. And, you know, USC is the Pac-12's Ohio State, okay? Ohio State is the marquee program in the Big Ten, and, you know, USC is that in the Pac-12. It's better for USC if they can play an undefeated Colorado, because that gives a higher profile to USC. If you think, you know, if USC is your best team, wouldn't you rather see them beat an undefeated Colorado as opposed to beat a two-loss Oregon? You know, so you're doing a disservice if you're the Pac-12 to USC and Colorado. So all these other conferences are doing what they can to set their best teams up as best as possible. And the Pac-12 so far has not done that. And it's, you know, I had a line the other day. It's not so 2020. That's just very Pac-12. You know, that's just what this conference does. And they get in their way so often, and they're doing it again. And I hope they remedy that going into next week.
They have every opportunity to. I mean, yes, Washington's going to be upset, or Oregon, whatever. But the rest, everyone else is going to understand. I mean, everyone else is going to get it. Hey, no, you're making exceptions. You're just jumble them all together. The first thing, Brian, they should have probably just scheduled CU and USC for this weekend to shut us all up in the first place, and then we just make them duke it out.
Yeah, and that's my biggest complaint. It's not necessarily the title game, but this week was so easy to set that up. And you know, before we knew Washington, Oregon was going to be canceled, they had a perfect situation where you could have had basically two divisional title games on Saturday, set it up and promote it as sort of a championship type of weekend, and end all debate in both divisions. Now, you know, there's going to be debate in both divisions. The Pac-12 screwed up this week more than anything. And now they've got a bigger problem on their hands for next week.
Well, first things first, though, right? USC has to take care of UCLA. CU has to take care of Utah. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. Talk to us about this matchup, what it looks like for the Buffs. And in a very, either way you slice it, the Buffs would, it would be amazing to walk away. Wow, the Buffs didn't lose this year.
Yeah, you know, this is a tough one, though. I mean, Utah's 1-2, but it's such a weird 1-2, and they're so much better than that, I think, that, yeah, I mean, they started later than any team in the country because they had COVID issues. And then they had to start off with USC and Washington. They lose their starting quarterback in the first series, I believe, against USC and lose that game. So they've kind of hit their stride a little bit. You know, last week they had a pretty good game. This is still a tough defense, a tough run game, and it's going to be a difficult game for the Buffs. I think they match up well with them, but Utah's had their number the last few years, and the Buffs have got to come to play.
Well, so what do you think, Brian? Is this a game? Do the Buffs find a way to win this game so that we can continue to have this fun Pac-12 debate for the rest of the week?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be an ugly one. You know, with snow on the ground, it's going to be cold. But, you know, two teams that duke it out in sort of ugly football. I think it'll be not the prettiest win, but the Buffs will take it, and I think that they win. I'm going to go 22-19 in this one. Not pretty, but the Buffs finish off undefeated and maybe get in that Pac-12 title game.
Wow. Wow. Wouldn't that be something? Who would have guessed that? When Mel Tucker leaves, COVID-19 hits, and Carl Durrell's hired, you know, you're hopeful for the best, but nobody really could have predicted it quite like this. And then you start the season, and a solid running back for CU goes down, and we're a little worried about that. And then Jarek Broussard bursts onto the scene. What a year, either way you slice this thing, for Colorado.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And honestly, you look at it, there's some scenarios where CU could not only be in the Pac-12 title game, but host it at Folsom Field next week, which, you know, I mean, that right there is so 2020, that Colorado would host the Pac-12 title game. But it's been a remarkable run. It's been fun to watch these guys, and I hope they keep it going.
Yeah, Brian, appreciate you, man. What are you working on for us that we can check out in Buff Zone, besides just writing fan fiction about Braveheart?
obviously, you know, previewing this game, and you know, a former Buff quarterback, Joel Klatt, will be in town to call the game for Fox.
Awesome.
And was able to catch up with him, and have a little story on him later on today.
I love it, man. Joel Klatt does a fantastic job. Brian, appreciate you as always, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens next week. Should be a lot of fun to talk about either way.
Yeah, it'll be great either way, and I look forward to talking to you about it next week.
All right, my man. That's Brian Howell of Buff Zone. And, yeah, he had tweeted that out. I had to give him a hard time about it. Not really a hard time, but he tweeted out Colorado's last 100-yard rusher against Utah was Bob Stransky with 162 yards in 1957. So the Buffs haven't ran for 100 yards against Utah since 1957. You got a guy in Jerick Broussard that ran for 300 yards last week. So maybe should have saved up 100 of those for this Utah game. But I gave him a Braveheart reference there. Follow him to find it. Brian Howell, at Brian Howell 33. Colfax, a lot to get to today. I want to get to, because you went through the work to get this clip. Our big story of the day, let's fire that off. And I think this one has people talking. Dun, dun. Big story of the day presented by FMS Bank. Banking made simple. Okay, Coach K, listen, no disrespect to this guy. He is the most decorated college basketball coach. He's one of the best basketball coaches in general in the history of the game. But he went off after a conference loss. They went off and he said, hey, we shouldn't be playing. We basically shouldn't be playing. And then Duke announced Thursday that it would not play any more non-conference basketball games this season. So it's out of an abundance of caution due to COVID-19 pandemic. Coach K has been very critical. He said, I would like for the safety, the mental and physical health of players and staff to assess where we're at. People are saying the next 6 weeks are going to be the worst. To me, it's already pretty bad. On the other side of it, there are these vaccines that are coming out. By the end of the month, 20 million vaccine shots will be given. By the end of January, February, another 100 million. So he's saying maybe we should reassess now and we should stop playing. Well, remember Coach K early was saying, hey, we cannot survive another year of no big dance. And if you stop now and reassess, then you put that in jeopardy. I mean, no matter what, if you cancel the season right now, as a lot of these teams are just now starting, some are getting going. I just think it's interesting. Well, Alabama coach Nate Oates responded to those quotes. And well, here is that. Here's that response.
Do you think if Coach K hadn't lost the 2-9 conference games at home, if he'd still be saying that?
Probably not.
Okay. I just wanted you to say it, not me. So, look, here's my deal on it. I think we'd have a whole lot more problems if we weren't playing games. Like, everybody talks about COVID. Here's the other thing. If COVID's so bad, all these I'm trying to do my best to keep the mask up. I've already had COVID, so I don't even – technically, I shouldn't have to keep it up. Nobody can get it from me. No, I'm still within the 150 days that the NCAA's recommended. I see all these other guys that haven't had it and they're masked down the whole game. It's like they got a chin strap on. So if they're really worried about COVID, you'd think their mask would be up the whole game, right? Like, I mean, so I think some of them are using no, we should be playing, in my opinion. We 100% should be playing basketball. Nobody talks about the mental. There's a kid out of Detroit that went to another high major that I just talked to his uncle the other day because his cousin played for me in Detroit. He went to a high major school somewhere, mental health issue, came home because he was quarantined for weeks on end when he got there. Like, what are these guys going to do? If I got three daughters, like they need to be in school. Like, humans aren't made to sit alone in isolation for weeks and weeks on end. We got to be careful with how we do life, but you still got to do life. Part of life, a huge part of life for all these guys I'm coaching is being in the gym playing basketball. So I think their mental health is in a much better spot playing basketball. I think the school, the SEC, the NCAA has done a really good job making sure that we're not putting any of them in danger. So I don't agree with them at all. And you answered the question for me, so thanks.
Let's respond to that coming back on the other side. Nate Oates, that was Nate Oates, Alabama coach, in response to Duke and in response to Coach K, basically saying maybe we need to stop the season and reassess. This is the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We're live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios.
It's a party in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA. The Block Party, Wednesdays from 4 to 10 p.m. NoCo now. Weekdays at 4 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 1310 KFKA.
What's up, Hooligans? This is Zach Stevens with DNVR Broncos, and you're listening to The Hole Show on 1310 KFKA.
I'm not going to be one of those guys that goes so far as to say Coach K lost a couple of non-conference games. I mean, dude, he has nothing left to prove. He could retire and be happy. Here's all I'm going to say, Colfax, and we won't get into a too long of a rant on this. I just say this to the millionaires and to the politicians. Be careful when you cast out your, hey, stay home, stay safe, we're in this together. You remember the beginning of this pandemic, man. How many Hollywood actors did you see come out and do videos? Jack Black, who I used to be a pretty big fan of, is in his gigantic backyard with a pool, a basketball court. I mean, anything you could ever want. Something, Colfax, you and I would never see. We'd see it at a park somewhere. And he's saying, put your masks on and stay home, idiots. Do what's right. Stay home. And he's dancing and doing all this stuff. And as he's dancing, you're looking around going, well, of course you can stay home. You have everything. You can play basketball there. You can probably start a restaurant in your backyard. Madonna's on in a bathtub with a glass of wine. The bathtub is bigger than Jack Black's pool, saying, do the right thing, everybody. Stay home. I mean, Ellen DeGeneres at least called it out. She said, you guys should all stay home. Everybody should have a luxury house like this. And don't realize that that's not how most people operate. So, Coach K, I love you. You've earned everything, man. But you're a rich guy. It's nothing for you to pack up and go home and sit tight for a month or two. Not everybody has that luxury. And a lot of these athletes, these student athletes, some of them, not all of them, some of them don't have the reason they're in sports and so dedicated to it so that they can get out. They'll go do something else with their life. And now you're just saying, nope, we're going to pause for another 2 months and see. I get it. We got to be safe. We got to wear masks. We got to do those things. I understand it. But shutting down businesses, shutting down entities and programs and basketball and practices and all this stuff, I worry about the distant future. What's all this going to do to that? So I think there's a way to be creative. Unfortunately, we're not getting. We just get governors throughout the state of LA, California telling you not to do something, and then they're out do something. It's frustrating. Second hour coming up. Broncos, Panthers. We'll talk about it next. See me and the boys, we don't like it. So we're getting up and going.